As he said, my name is Madison Carr, and I would like to thank y'all for coming up today. I am a senior at the University of Tennessee at Martin, and I did this study under the help of Dr. Heather Kelly, the field crops pathologist with the University of Tennessee. This study was focusing on the fungal pathogen frog eye leaf spot, Cercospora sojina, and it's a foliar disease in soybeans. Frog eye leaf spot favors warm and wet conditions, which are characteristic of West Tennessee in the soybean growing season. Frog eye leaf spot overwinters in plant debris and survives in the soybean residue and the seeds. Frog eye leaf spot infects the plants and causes lesions that are gray to dark brown being in the margin. As you can see with this picture, you can see where it resembles a frog's eye. On the underside of the leaf, the lesions will have a cluster of spores in the center of the lesion, which is shown in the bottom picture where you can see the white to gray color, and that would be the spores produced by the lesion. The symptoms of frog eye leaf spot develop during the reproductive stages of the soybean. With this study, it is presumed the spores produced by the fungal pathogen, Cercospora sojina, are dispersed by the wind and or from the water splash off the debris. The following trial was conducted to investigate if one mechanism of inoculum dispersal was more prominent than the other. This is a picture of my research there in Milan, Tennessee, an aerial view. So going with frog eye leaf spot and trying to figure out kind of more about it and the inoculum dispersal of frog eye leaf spot, we went to the literature and found a study done by Muhammad Khan in North Dakota, where he had done a study on the mechanism of inoculum dispersal in Cercospora leaf spot, which is from the pathogen Cercospora baedicola, which is in the same genus as Cercospora sojina, which my study was on. In this study, there was a natural inoculum from the soil, or from the plant debris. Their treatments included a plastic cage around the sugar beets, which is shown in the very top picture of the cages. This is to prevent the inhibit the wind-blown spores that are coming in. The second one would be the sugar beet plants with the plastic ground cover, which is shown in the very bottom picture, which you can see the tarp laying on the ground, which would inhibit the splash dispersed spores. The third treatment would be the plastic cage around the sugar beet plants and the plastic ground cover, which is inhibiting both the wind and splash dispersed spores, kind of like the best control of the study, best control treatment. Then the fourth treatment, of course, was the non-treated control. The disease severity data was collected on the middle two rows of each treatment. For more on the mechanism inoculum dispersal, you can go to this book where we found most of the information, which is on the Cercospora leaf spot of sugar beet and related species. Back to my study. So my study was conducted in the Milan Research Education Center in Milan, Tennessee in 2014. The field is continuous no-till soybean production for over 10 years, which causes a high disease pressure of frog eye leaf spot in the field. In the picture shown, you can see that my study was in the kind of the corner of the field, which kind of isolated it and put it there in a good spot for the disease, because we wanted disease, obviously. My experimental design was randomized complete blocks with four reps using the 25 feet by 10 feet plot. On the first treatment that you can see there in the red would be the wind inhibited treatment. That's a typo on the three, but it's just a transparent plastic cages that's around 5 feet of the center two rows, and approximately they're 4.5 feet tall, and that is the treatment to inhibit the wind dispersed spores. The second treatment that you see labeled as rain splash, is black tarp laid between the rows to inhibit the debris splash spores. The third treatment, of course, is our non-treated check, and the last treatment being the combo wind and rain splash, and it's the last treatment which excludes the both splash and wind dispersal, and using the cages and the tarp. With this, we also had the natural occurring inoculum, and they were put out at growth stage R3, and that we had weekly disease ratings taken. With the weekly disease ratings, we kind of put them in a graph to kind of show, since they were put out at R3, they really didn't give us the results that we wanted and we were looking for. We found this is with our disease ratings, doing on a 1 to 100% scale, one being the lowest, you know, and 100 being the highest of the percent of the leaf that was actually affected by the lesions. This is, you can see on the x-axis, is the days that the ratings were taken, and on the y would be the disease severity in percent. With this, you can see that there's just kind of the same trend of each with each treatment. But then we took it a little further, and we did the area under the disease progress curve, which will be on the next slide. But to better, you know, show, it would be the area that is actually under each of the curves. So this is, when we put it through the AUDPC analysis, we saw that kind of what we expected, that the combo wind and splash treatment did have the lowest disease. But then we found that, unexpectedly, the non-treated plots actually had low disease too, and the wind and splash had higher disease, which just was unexpected. Not significantly different, just numerically a little different. With the wind and splash being a higher disease rating, it was probably had a lot to do with, like I said, it was deployed a little bit later than it should have. There was disease already present in the field. With the treatments, it probably was affected by the temperature and relative humidity. So putting all that together, that kind of probably influenced it a lot more than we needed to. With that, we put, and these are still being analyzed, we put log tag analyzers in every single plot about a foot and a half high in the middle of the plot, and if they take it 15-minute intervals, the percent of relative humidity and the percent of, or the degrees Fahrenheit. So we were able to see, you know, kind of how, once these are analyzed, we'll be able to see how they really affect each plot, each treatment, each day, each time, that kind of thing. So, like I said, in our conclusions, we found that the treatments did not significantly affect the disease differences, maybe due to the disease already present in the field when the treatments were deployed. And we could also use smaller treatments of the area to have the significant effect. And like I said, as expected, numerically, the wind and splash combo inhibited treatment had the lowest area under the disease pressure curve numerical numbers. But the unexpectedly, the wind-inhibited individual and the splash-inhibited individual treatments had the greater disease than the non-treated. But like I said, this may be due to the treatments affected by the temperature or relative humidity. So with that, we have in our future plans, because we are going to replicate this next year, we are going to revise the treatment, scale them down to be more effective, which is shown if you look at the bottom two pictures, that's scaling them down, not as covering so much, you know, so long in the plot and so much area, kind of, you know, condensing them down to be more effective. With this, we'll analyze the temp and relative humidity data, which may lead to using Tyvek instead of the plastic in the treatments. The plastic we used, if we use the Tyvek, it'll allow a little bit more airflow, but still inhibit the spores. They also have, it'll be on the top, so it'll still work, but it should inhibit the windblown spores. We will deploy these before the reproductive growth stage begins and the disease develops. We, you know, had every intention of putting them out before the disease develops, but they're in West Tennessee. We have a lot of different stations and a lot of things going on, and sometimes it just, you know, sweeps right by you. And we're going to also utilize the spore traps in each treatment, which are kind of quantifying the amount of spores in each plot. I would like to thank Dr. Heather Kelly and everybody at the West Tennessee Research and Education Center and at the Milan Research and Education Center. And if anybody has any questions, I'll take them now. Thank you. So the question was there a weather station or something around to kind of track the weather throughout the season?
Yeah. Was it just a low windy time, not much precipitation?
It was actually a very wet growing season, and we do have weather stations in the different, we have different research plots on each one of our stations, and so we could have used that, but we were really kind of relying on the log tag analyzers for that. So we do have other weather stations we could have used, but we were kind of relying on the log tag, so hopefully that'll, in the future, they'll be better. Thank y'all. Oh, go ahead. Well, we use resistant varieties, different varieties of soybeans that are, you know, shown to be resistant for frog leaf spot, or, you know, better for it. And then also just timely fungicide applications using the right fungicide, the right mode of action. Well, so you're asking how much it did. Oh, it was a lot of labor, but it's not practical for a farmer to use. This is more of just kind of figuring out the basis of the pathogen, finding out a little bit more about it. It's a very big deal in West Tennessee and affects a lot of soybeans. So we're trying to, and there's a lot of things we don't understand about it yet. So to better understand it, you know, which is it wind that, you know, is worse, or is it, you know, the splash that's worse? Trying to figure that out, then we'll be able to, you know, kind of progress and see what would be better in the future. Thank you.